We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast. This time we are joined by my friend Adam Pivko of Autumn.com. Try Autumn.com. Adam is the co-founder and chief strategy officer there. And what Autumn does is it marries up the supplements you need and, most importantly, excludes the supplements you really don't need with your DNA, okay? It's an extra step that 99.9% at least of the supplement companies out there are not taking, and yet it's super important because there's things lying in your DNA that may well be predicting bad things that might be coming around the corner unless you kind of address them with supplementation. It is a personalized vitamin brand that matches those vitamins with your DNA. But this isn't Adam's first rodeo. Adam has helped hundreds of founders and thousands of brands improve their business in some way, shape, or other. It might be through the CRMs that have processed billions, that's with a B, billions of dollars that they've been working with. It might be through CRO, it might be some kind of strategy. The guy is a little bit of an enigma that has done everything to date, and now he is going semi-solo with his co-founder to take on this huge problem, this huge challenge in the world of billions of people without the safety net of these other people involved, shall we say. So I am so excited. I am actually already in love with tryautumn.com. So I think without further ado, I think we should get into it. We should talk about it. We should welcome Adam to the stage. Adam, how's it going?
I'm good. Happy to be here, Martin. Happy to connect with you. Been a big fan of Smarter Destiny for a while. You have some incredible past attendees, and I'm humbled by the opportunity.
I'm humbled to have you on, brother. And it's been a while since we hung out. And, you and I, we travel in the similar circles. And I'm really, really excited that you're in the e-commerce space, because I know good things will happen as a result of that. But without further ado, let's go back in time and figure out where you come from. So whereabouts in the world are you sat right now? And how does that compare to where you were when you first realized that, hey, I might be an entrepreneur?
I'm a dual citizen, grew up in Canada, and now I'm currently located in Toronto. But I did have a nice little stint through middle school and high school in New Jersey. So there is definitely where I had my first kind of foray with entrepreneurship. I was making designs for people. I've always been kind of artistic, and I was making typically Photoshop designs for whether it be sprays in video games or headlines on documents or for people's websites. I was making banners, those types of things. Really small, not a big shop, just me doing my thing, having fun doing it. But that's definitely where I made my first kind of internet money, if you will.
Nice. Similar background here, actually, with the throes of graphics design. And were you the smart younger kid who charged what you were actually worth? Or were you the typical younger kid who was taken advantage of unknowingly and did amazing designs for peanuts whilst big founders with big pockets laughed?
I always liked the volume plays. So I would do heavy volume discounts. But no, I was definitely charging money. It was a sought after service, and people thought I was really good at what I did. So, I think I charged fairly.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay. I didn't. I charged way less than what I should have charged, I think. Got a lot of repeat businesses off the back of it, though, and was always busy, shall we say, in the design play. Okay. So you really cut your teeth in the design space. And where did that evolve to next? Were you still in New Jersey at this point?
I was in New Jersey up until, the end of high school, after which I went to university in Canada, met a girl, never left. Kind of that story, without a doubt. Now, there's this old saying, it's your daughter is your daughter for life, but your son is your son until he meets his wife. And I'm definitely like that. So, absolutely. Yeah, it was through university. I was doing a lot of bartending at kind of private members clubs, as well as some bars. I always had fun doing that. I'm very personable and, like to smile and shake a shaker. But right after university, I ended up getting right into sales and kind of going that route, more the career route. and learning and growing. And I think it was awesome experience, actually. My first job at a university was selling photocopiers for this company called Ricoh. And that was like door to door, business to business, a lot of rejection, barely getting meetings, wearing a suit, walking around in winter. Like it was tough. But I definitely learned a lot and came out of there a way better business focused person. And I would say extremely hireable. It made me more hireable.
I would agree. And actually, we get that a lot on the show. We get some kind of sales background a lot on the show with like the successful entrepreneurs that we interview. And there's definitely a link there, you know, even if at the time it might have felt painful trying to sell those photocopiers. So what was your next foray into something a little bit more digital, online selling, branding, e-commerce, SaaS, that kind of thing? What was the next thing?
My real first foray was essentially an SEO-driven mobile app that we would go and sell to restaurants, to vendors, to stores, to basically say, hey, advertise one of your coupons to all of our members. So we had this, you know, platform where merchants and businesses, physical stores around different cities that we were selling in, could advertise. And it was that really opened my eyes. Right from there, I got a job. After that, I left and got a job at an affiliate network. And that was straight into it and kind of never looked back. Did merchant processing, did anti-fraud, did CRM, did massive e-commerce platform. So yeah.
Nice. And I think that affiliate side and the sales and the affiliate side and e-com, I think that's something that we definitely need to get into later on in this episode. I think it's super relevant and sometimes overlooked, particularly amongst, say, performance marketers who are like looking to just spend money to make money. That affiliate side's an important area in many ways. Now, let's put a pin in that and I'll come back to that a little bit later on. And so, at some point, you decided, right, I'm making a lot of other people successful. I'm making a lot of other people very wealthy. I've got this itch I need to scratch. Where did Autumn come from in the first place? Like, what was that little annoying thing that stuck around even when you slept on it?
Listen, it's so blatant in my eyes and how it kind of came around. It started with a health scare. I was a chief champagne officer at a former company. My job was to wine and dine clients all over the world. And I ended up getting diagnosed with gout, which, if you're not familiar with, it's like an old rich man's disease. It's for people who eat too much rich food and don't take care of their health. And honestly, it was just an eye opening and a wake up and like a shock to the body, a shock to the system kind of call out. And I ended up hiring a personal trainer, a nutritionist, and a dietitian, and really turning my life around. You know, as I switched companies, I was really taking care of my health and doing a great job, but I ended up getting really terrible recommendations from a nutritionist, ones that made me feel really weak, tired, like not optimal. And I knew that it was a supplementation because it was literally the only thing I changed. I was eating healthy, I was working out, and I really just wanted to understand why. So I reached out to somebody who I knew has had health challenges, a former client of mine, a longtime friend in Toronto, who I also know has spent a lot of money and a lot of time on his health. And I said, hey, like, what would you recommend? Like, we had this just like coming to heart moment. And he put me onto this technology called nutrigenomics, which is essentially a genetic test that shows you from a nutrition standpoint where you have outliers. And I immediately did this. I was like, this sounds exactly what I need. Like, you totally nailed it. And I got this massive report from some company. I think it was like 450 pages or something. I was reading through it. I felt like I needed a medical degree to understand. And it didn't ultimately have exactly, you know, what brands or what dosages or what real recommendations I could go and implement. So I ended up wasting a bunch of time and money shopping on Amazon, getting really frustrated by the whole thing. And it was that culminating effort, not to mention once I figured out why these recommendations from my nutritionist were so bad, like based on my genetics, which is like, who thought of that connection? Like, I have no idea, but whoever did is brilliant. And I had this, you know, eye-opening experience. I knew that this was the way forward. This is the way that we could ultimately help a lot of people. And we started helping like family and like really close family, really close friends, getting their inputs and feedback before even turning this into a business. It was really like, does this work for more than just myself and my co-founder? because we were ultimately the first customers without a doubt.
I think that's brilliant. I think it's brilliant, but I think then that 400-page report, that's what happens when a techie or a doctor or someone creates a customer-facing area of their business, right? Like, it's 400 pages. Come on, man. Just tell me what I need to take, and you can summarize it. Hell, you can give me Amazon links if you like. Just give me 10 Amazon links, and I'll buy those things. But it's a story that is... It's a common one. Even I've gone through this myself, where it takes a long time to find necessarily the one size fits all supplements, should we say. The supplements which are important, you don't necessarily get through your diet. You don't necessarily get through your geography as well, particularly in like cloudy, grey England here. It's not to the level of Triautumn, but it's better than not taking anything. But I remember even getting like a list from like Dave Asprey. I've got a list of the sort of, you know, 10, 12 supplements you should take. But even that's not the end of it, because then you need to figure out what dosage you need. Often the dosages are tied to like your weight or your age or both. And then you need to, once you've figured that out, you need to find someone that's supplying it at that dosage who you can trust. They're not using fillers. It's genuine. It's high quality. It's, in the case of, say, a plant-based supplement, it's from the leafy part, not the rooty part, or the rooty part, not the leafy part, right? There's so much that you have to sort of learn and get into before you end up with a fistful of pills, which isn't a fun experience either, by the way, but a fistful of pills that you take on a daily basis, like your
listen,
you know.
I was like that before doing this, before making this brand, before building this. I was totally like that. I was taking a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't need, that were one size fits all, that I kind of self-prescribed and didn't really have the nutritional education to get right. I don't even know why I did it, looking back. Just because I thought, and because of who I was reading and who I trusted, it was like, again, one man's food is another man's poison. And the sooner that you resonate with that as a human and really understand that everybody's different, and it could be the littlest thing, that it could be one ingredient in a multivitamin that's actually doing way more harm than good in your body. And you just think by going about your day, oh, I'm taking a multivitamin, it must be something else that's affecting me. When really it's like what you're putting in your body, it's what you're doing to yourself that could be really not giving you that optimal life. I really believe that before getting a personalized regimen, I didn't even know what healthy could even really feel like. It's been such an awesome journey, not only to reap the benefits for myself, but also just to see and implement and enact real change. You know, everybody always said personalized health is the future. Everybody kept saying that. And I was like, oh, it's the future. Like, why not bring it to the present? Who's stopping us from bringing it to the present? So that's what we tried to do.
I love that. And so we've got the challenge. We've got the painful story. We've got the why. But now you need to create something in a very competitive space, and through systematic abuse over the years, quite a heavily regulated space now, right? Like not just in the advertising, but in the payment processing and all of the rest of the stuff. You now need to make a splash and stand out in this world, and you're starting from scratch against these brands which go all the way up to Big Pharma. How did you get started?
You know, I think we just decided to launch the business with a heightened level of integrity, because that's ultimately what we do here, is we refuse to sell people vitamins and supplements that they don't actually need. You can't just go shopping with us. You can't just be like, oh, somebody told me I need magnesium, let me add that to my cart. It doesn't work like that. It's you take our tests, you take a DNA test, which is really thorough, really deep, really getting to the root cause. You combine that with a really, you know, extensive lifestyle assessment, you know, asks things about diet, exercise, habits, goals, medications, allergies, all these different things, so that we can really curate and get it right on the first try, exactly what you actually need. So yeah, it was kind of one day, it was a combination of, you know, I felt like I took the red pill And I could just see through all the nonsense that's around me, from daily recommended values on supplement labels, which, you know, I'm, for those of you who can't see,
during the war,
I'm 6'5", 240 pounds. Like, there's no way I have the same daily recommended values as anybody else. So like, looking at this label, it almost means nothing to me.
Well, I've got a funny story on that one, actually, Adam. So like, for example, your vitamin C, certainly in the UK, those levels, I believe, were set during World War II when there was rations, right? And so when they were setting those levels, they had to be aware that actually people were only being given like one orange per week, right? And an orange has this much vitamin C in it. So they couldn't be like, oh, you need like 10 times that. Because people, they would be outraged. You're already giving me one, though. So, you know, so there's other things at play with the RDAs and the recommended daily allowances. Well, but yeah, like you're right.
That red pill goes so deep. It, you know, directly in line with that is I found out that in order to become a doctor, like a general practitioner, a family doctor, you need 25 hours of nutritional education in your program. Right. Meanwhile, you ask any doctor, it's like, hey, what percent of ailments or life-threatening issues or diseases are caused by poor nutrition or poor lifestyle choices? They're going to say like 90%. So wait a second, you spent 25 hours out of a 4-year on average doctor degree to cover 90% of issues? It's just like, it's systemic with regards to nutritional education being super, super low. In North America, which again, you might not, you're probably familiar with, it's probably even the same in England, but in North America, nutritional education accounts for 8 hours per year of school. Like, that's not even enough to instill one good habit. Like, there's nowhere close. And then you go even further. It's like, there's 40,000 grocery stores in the US. Meanwhile, there's like 250,000 fast food locations. It's like you're constantly inundated with this poor advice, poor nutritional education from marketing and advertising, availability, cost. It's all there. They have, you know, a bigger trifecta to cause harm with. So, yeah, you know, I felt like I just could see through it all. I was enlightened one day. It all hit me. And the one thing that it was, I'll tell you, I remember the exact experience. I was looking and I was like shopping and trying to be really healthy with my eating. And I picked up a banana and I was like, why are there no supplement facts on a banana? It just like something hit me. I don't know. It felt like I alleviated a lot of stress that I was having about eating healthy and trying to live an optimally healthy life and like be there for my family and not have these health issues. Like, yeah, it was just a culmination.
I think, like you said, when you take the red pill, it's crazy what you uncover. I mean, like you said, that there's no nutritional facts on a banana, but if you got like frozen banana in like the smoothie mix section of the supermarket, there's your nutritional facts. It'll be on that one, but you don't necessarily know where that banana came from or when it was open or whatever. The fact that like fruit and veg, it's combined into one sentence. You need fruit and veg. No, actually, you need more veg. Like, fruit's actually like it has its place, but it's actually really, really sugary, and actually that's not so good for you. And there's anyway, that's a whole different thing, right? And then you get into, like you mentioned, the 40,000 grocery stores which sell supplements. You will pick the one off the shelf, or most people will pick the one off the shelf which kind of looks right. And honestly, Adam, I was just discussing with my wife the other day that I'm going to actually record a rant video about the supplement, particularly the nootropic industry, because, like, for example, a lot of our competitors, they are successful because they have a lot of ingredients on their label. And they're reliant on the fact that no one knows what the dosage levels they should have, right? So they've got like one milligram of something in it. And people are like, oh, tick, it's got blah, blah in it. But like 1 milligram, do you know how little that is? And yeah, so it's preaching to the converted, man. So you took the red pill, you're getting angry about the world. You want to lead with integrity. But in this space, you have to prove to another level to cut through the noise of the other marketers. So how did you go about like rounding up your doctors, rounding up the science, delving through the scientific papers, doing all the stuff you need to do to stand out?
Yeah. So in our journeys of trying to optimize our own health, we kind of went through a couple practitioners ourselves. So not only do we pick the winners that worked with us, to help us build the foundations of what has become Autumn today. But it was really being out there, talking about the mission, talking about why this is so important in pretty public forums that ended up garnering a lot of interest. We had doctors reaching out to us, wanting to learn more. We had nutritionists, geneticists, pharmacists, physicians, naturopaths, functional wellness practitioners, all kind of engaged in the topic, passionate about it, wanting to see change. And ultimately, by incorporating all of their different kind of expertise, we'd be able to create something really, really special. Now, that definitely came with its challenges. And, you know, you can imagine, it's almost like getting a room full of lawyers to go debate some type of topic. You get all these different opinions and all these different recommendations. Meanwhile, the way that we decided to do it was, hey, you guys have competing beliefs about this certain situation. Provide evidence, provide peer-reviewed, scientifically backed documents in order to support what it is you're recommending. Whether you've tested it on three people in your clinic or you've only read a document, we want proof. So that's how we built the, you know, all of our algorithms is completely backed by science. Every single gene, every single SNP, every single lifestyle quiz question that we have that addresses some type of change in the personalization that you end up getting is backed by science. And, beautiful. You know, the challenge with science right now is it's a very politically charged term. It's got a lot of misconceptions. It's got a lot of distrust. It's got a lot of people who abuse it. We have competitors that say, hey, you know, these are patented products. Meanwhile, they don't even use the same dosages. They don't use the same formulas. And they just like tap into, you know, science, if you will, to validate their products. Meanwhile, you know, what we've done is we've created very individualized, you know, supplements and vitamins. So it is exactly what it says it is. You know what I mean? But yeah, you know, we've decided to really leverage technology to automate and to use very advanced algorithms, taking a lot of inputs, all from Eastern and Western medicines, from all sorts of different types of doctor expertise to really build something super easy, digestible, understood, and, you know, enable people to take action. Because ultimately, you could get all the advice in the world. If you're not going to take action, then what's the point? So we didn't want to be, you know, no offense to online course makers, but like they know like 30% or so maybe take action on their information. So we said, hey, we don't want to be just a report company. We want to be a company that actually enables people to take action. And that's why we went custom formulated all of our ingredients, all of our own products, and make it super available in these, you know, pre-packaged morning and night pouches. Make beautiful. It easy.
And whereabouts are your customers based?
100% US right now.
Nice. And so one of the things that I noticed about Triautum is that you have a mission that is bigger than we help the people that can afford our products to have a better life. And I think that's so important. And I think entrepreneurs, I've said this many times publicly, I believe that entrepreneurs and brand owners are missing a trick and doing the world a disservice if their brand doesn't also, in addition to whatever service you're putting out, doesn't also make the world a little bit better in some way, shape or form. Case in point, for example, Nubru, we're fortifying the meals of malnourished children. Okay, and we've now fortified more than 40 million meals for malnourished children. These are people that can never afford our products. They're more concerned with not getting diarrhea and dying from it, right? These are people that we wouldn't otherwise touch unless we, you know, took the extra steps to have that kind of give back, have that charity, have that baked into the business model. I believe you have something similar. Could you tell us about it?
Yeah, we're partnering with Vitamin Angels. They as well give malnutrition, particularly women and children in predominantly third world countries, access to vitamins and minerals that they need most. So, you know, part of our mission is definitely to give back to that through our checkout process. You know, we're not ones to say, hey, get you to spend as much as possible with us and hit you with all these different offers and try to sell you more supplements that you don't need. Instead, we add, hey, do you want to make a donation to Vitamin Angels as part of our, you know, part of our flow? So yeah, super passionate about it. I think it's an awesome cause. There's some really great brands that are attached to it too. But yeah, they're meaningfully changing life expectancy, health and wellness across the world.
Amazing. And so those are the people listening today that want to learn more about Autumn, where can they go? How do they get started?
Yeah, it would be tryautumn.com. That's definitely where you can get the most information, or check us out on any social media platform. We're kind of everywhere, doing a lot of education, a lot of edutainment, if you will. And really, part of our mission as well is really just to squash a bunch of myths. There's a lot of misinformation around nutrition, genetics, science, technology, even biohacking or sleep optimization, or kind of everything around. We're really trying to tap into finding where there's misconceptions and calling it like it should be, with professionals and insights and proven practices.
Beautiful. Love that. So tryautumn.com, folks, check it out. There is a ton of information on the website, and it looks really, really nice, and it's really, really easy to access. So Adam, thank you so much for putting that out into the world. At this point in the show, we mix it up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You answer them at the speed that feels best for you and most comfortable. Are you up for that?
I'm ready.
Yeah. Are you two thumbs up? Up for that?
Two thumbs up for that.
There they are. All right. Question number one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
Wow. Start again. You know, I'm super passionate about helping people. So, you know, it would be some type of leveraging either my existing skill sets or things that I'm passionate about to really help even just a small number of people at first, and then try to expand that. That's really my mentality in general, is help some people, get that kind of reward to your system, to your brain, to your endorphins, and really go from there.
Nice. What's the most common or biggest mistake leaders make?
I would say not taking ownership, not taking responsibility. You know, having worked with hundreds of brands, you know, thousands of brands, hundreds of brand owners, I can tell you that the best ones were the ones that said, hey, I'm going to fix this. The worst ones were saying, you know, this isn't my fault. So I think it's all about taking ownership and really, you know, it's your business ultimately. So you call all the shots and you make it happen or you don't.
Nice. Who is a great leader, whether alive or dead, and why?
This one, wow. You know, I've always been a fan of kind of sports analogies for business. I've always been, you know, on the sports side of things. So I would venture to say, you know, some type of NFL coach or some type of quarterback, even, you know, big name quarterbacks in football, let's say, American football, that is. And I would say those would be probably my top picks for, you know, exemplary leaders, really bringing up the worst. And, you know, when people are at their worst, bringing them up, when people are at their best, supporting them. That would generally be my pick. To pick one person is unreal.
Nice. No, but you've touched upon the attributes there, and I was going to follow up with that, saying, like, you know, these great quarterbacks, what is it about them that makes them a great leader? But like you said, like picking them up when they're at their lowest, and just setting them loose when they're at their best, and keeping them at that charged level. I think that's great. How do you evaluate a good business deal?
That's a great question. I think there has to be multiple elements. You know, one of the challenges of being an entrepreneur that I learned very quickly is that at any given second, there's an infinite number of ways that you can be improving your business. But really, what it means to be an entrepreneur is prioritizing each of those possible opportunities. And with regards to partnerships, I think that it definitely has to align with timing. Just because something's shiny and new and looks great at surface level, if it doesn't align with your set prioritizations and your set goals for your business, then, you know, there's no harm in really postponing a deal. So in terms of taking a deal and doing a deal, I think it's really got to align like that. I think that partnerships in these day and ages, especially in e-commerce, really need to open you up to new audiences and new people and new perspectives that you can't or would have a higher level difficulty of reaching. If you can reach them and you know how to maybe even talk to those types of customers that other partnership has, you know, is that really a leg up for how much revenue you're going to give away in that partnership or however that deal is structured? But also, don't forget to value everything that you have as skills. A lot of times, you know, when you're getting your business started, you're so attracted to these partnership deals that are like, ooh, they have 100,000 customers that they're going to email for me or whatever. Meanwhile, you're neglecting what you're also bringing to the table, which is perhaps, you know, your different expertise, your unique opinions, your ability to create content, your network yourself. So don't undervalue what you have in a partnership.
Nice, I like that. And earlier on in the interview, we said we're going to put a pin in the affiliate marketing side of things for e-commerce. And I think that's relatable here with this question and talking about other people and the audiences they have or the expertise or the people they're able to speak to. How important is affiliate marketing in 2022? And what differences perhaps are there with how it's being done traditionally nowadays compared to how it's being done?
Yeah, you know, I think before even diving into that specific question, which I'm happy to address, I think it's important for everybody to understand that in my definition, there's two types of affiliates. There's content producing affiliates and there's media buying affiliates. So content producing affiliates typically don't have too much cost, if perhaps even no cost except for their time and their expertise, to write a review, to shoot a TikTok, to take a picture on Instagram, to do whatever. Those are content producing affiliates. What's great about them is, again, you can tap into a whole bunch of people that trust that person. You can, you know, leverage existing trust in particular, but also maybe they're just really cool content creators that create these things that you couldn't do yourself very easily, because that's how they spend their time. The challenge with them is, in most cases, you know, it's this huge spike in traffic and then it dwindles off very, very quickly. And ultimately, to make content producing affiliates work, you need a whole bunch of them and kind of like this consistent cadence of posting to get that linear or growing amount of sales. And for e-commerce brands, I can tell you, one of the most difficult parts is kind of managing inventory. So if you have these huge spikes, it's very hard to manage and forecast inventory. As opposed to the other side of the coin, which would be like media buying affiliates. So those are the ones that are risking their own money to acquire customers or basically play the traffic arbitrage game. They want to acquire customers cheaper than what you pay them out every time they do. Now, what's amazing about those types of affiliates is if they lock into your offer, if they dial it in, you know, the scale is linear and very, very, you know, consistent, because they want to keep making money, you want to keep making money, and that relationship just grows. So I'm much more preferential to the side of media buying affiliates, but you have to know that they're not going to mess around with an offer that's not performing. Your offer has to have this kind of proven track record, this success, these metrics that they need to have the confidence to risk their own money, as opposed to these content producing affiliates, which are probably a great place to start for early entrepreneurs or early businesses. They help establish trust and get the name out there. And it's like awareness and exposure, which are really, really important in the early stages of an entrepreneur venture. So in terms of your question about like, where is it changing or where is the importance? I think I kind of touched on it. You know, content producing affiliates for early stages, I think is really, really important. And you should definitely look at, you know, influencer models or channels or those types of things in the early stages of your business. And again, you know, if you've mastered the model and they're performing and you have the type of resources to make that opportunity scale, then by all means. But I think once you've established, you know, top performing pages and a great offer, and you really understand your numbers, you understand what you're willing to afford or what you can afford to acquire new customers with and what they're worth to you and so on and so forth, and how much value you're bringing to them, you know, that's when you can really layer in kind of the media buying affiliate side of the house.
I think that's brilliant. I think that's a really, really easy to understand way of segmenting. Like, you know, people talk about influencer marketing, and really what they're talking about is the content affiliate, as you put it, the personality that's already got a large following. And yeah, like you said, they could just record a new YouTube video at limited cost and put it out to their owned audience, and some sales will happen in a big spike that will come down rapidly. And there is a blend of that, and I think there's other things to explore with those content producing influencers, particularly if their channel shows a history of really, really great content that they've produced. I think you can leverage some of that with your ads elsewhere and utilize that style, particularly if it resonates. But yeah, absolutely, it's the media buying style partners that are great, and they're great as not just for consistent sales, but it's also great, I think, for testing other channels quickly, testing out.
The feedback loop from working with an immediate expert who's risking their own money on your offer, you know, it is is paramount. You know, you really have to look at, especially in my opinion, especially media buying affiliate relationships as truly a partnership. You have to support them. You have to give them your best creative. You have to give them what's worked for you elsewhere if they're going to be trying, especially a new platform, but maybe trying with some different audiences or different targeting or different geos. Yeah, you know, you have to provide them the ammunition to be successful, because the sooner they're successful, the sooner everybody wins.
Absolutely. What's one of your proudest moments?
I'm not entirely sure about that. You know, I've had a child. That's always great. You know, seeing them grow up, and he's 4 years old now, start making good decisions and, you know, love the things I love, that gives me, you know, a sense of proud every day. So that's definitely where I think I tap into my proud vein as much as possible is through my child. But other than that, I think I feel proud when I do a good job for somebody else that doesn't involve money. And I've made a career for myself in the e-commerce space by not lining my own pockets every time I do an introduction or a referral. Like, I've really shied away from ever doing that. And when I've connected people, I become this source of trust and good advice and somebody to talk to. And when people come back after helping them and want more help, to me, that's also like a little proud vein. It's like, hey, I've done a good job and they want to keep working with me. So that's what does it for me, I think.
Nice. I like that. What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Wish I had this question ahead of time. I would have like asked the wife or something. I'm really big into a not super popular sport. It's called airsoft. It's kind of like paintball, but better. I don't think a lot of people know that about me, but it's definitely one of my favorite pastimes. Great exercise outside. It's like real life Call of Duty, if you will. You get to shoot people, which I think is super fun and super, you know, adrenaline forming. But yeah.
I agree with that. And adrenaline forming as well, because there's actual real pain when you get hit, right? And, like, it hurts. You feel it.
But if you're wearing full camo, you know, it's not the time to wimp out.
Yeah. No, I like that. There you go. You answered it great without the wife having an input. I do wonder what she would have said there.
I probably regret even saying that. She's going to come back to me with it.
What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
Yeah, I think, well, first and foremost, I'm very focused on my sleep. I think it's really important for people to take care of your sleep. It's something not hard to do. You just have to be diligent. And I'm now at the point where I go to sleep and I wake up at the same time, no alarm ever. I just wake up and I'm typically at the same time every day, give or take a minute or two, which I think is just remarkable that my body knows when I've had enough and that's it. But I also, when I get home, after a work day every day, I love to take time and just play with my kid completely, not think about anything work related, not have any, you know, ongoing responsibilities, not checking my phone, not immediately turning on the TV, playing. I think it keeps me young. It keeps me energized. I love the experience. I love our relationship. But one thing I also have been doing lately, which actually I'm pretty proud of, but again, it's not for money. It's every night I ask my kid what he'd like me to draw for him. And I draw on a post-it note every single night and slap it on his lunchbox every single day of school. And I can tell you that in doing that about, I think I must have done 75 to 100 of them by now. My drawing progression from the first post-it note to where I am now is incredible. So I used to draw a lot. I used to be really creative and bring that back into my life for that quick, 5 to 10 minutes drawing anything he wants on a post-it note has really brought a lot of joy back into my like creativity and really kind of invigorated me. So I really like that.
I love that. I do a similar thing actually. So I have a son, Saxon, who has just turned 4 as well, just last week, and do something similar. He's got these things called like bath crayons. So it's like you can draw on the inside of the bath with them and rub it off. And yeah, it's got to the point now every bath time he's like, draw this, draw that. And it's like little sketches on like the tiles around the bathroom, like little drawings and stuff.
But
yeah, you get good at drawing upside down and things like that, because like it's not super easy to draw the inside of the bath when you're not inside the bath. And so, yeah, like you said, it's good fun. You progress. It's not work, and it's completely in the moment. Yeah, no, I love that. Like the creativity of it, and what we do for our kids, right? Like we wouldn't do that otherwise. I love that.
I really enjoy it. And I think Post-it note is a great medium. It's kind of like a limiting space. You know, you can really accomplish a lot. You can go into really big detail, but it's also just like, you know, we have this wall in our kitchen island that's just like covered in them. Like every time he comes home and I or my wife clean out his lunch, we take the Post-it note and slap it onto the wall. So we have like this collage of my drawings, which I think is really cool.
Nice. What book or books changed your mindset or life?
Yeah, I think that there's a bunch. Mindset on life, I would say like life and work principles by Ray Dalio is super, super interesting and totally worth a read. I'm a big fan in terms of like, I've always been kind of involved or directly involved in the subscription model space. So really kind of understanding more concepts around retention or customer satisfaction or increasing people to make decisions or keep with a healthy habit. Those have always been really interesting. Books like Hooked come to mind. I really like a book called Nudge as well, especially for health and wellness. And of course, there's some recent books that have come out. One of my former employers, Bruce Cran, launched a book on, you know, how to be a millionaire, essentially. It's about media buying and like an unknown career, kind of bringing more people into the media buying space. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that book. You know, $100 million offer book, I think is super, super interesting. So yeah, you know, I'm definitely more of the business or marketing or technology or psychology kind of book reader. I'm not, you know, so much of a fictional book reader or anything like that.
Absolutely. I was looking around then. I've got a signed copy from Bruce somewhere about my desk. But as I said, oh, here it is. As I said, the leash of this headphone wire today is a challenge. But yeah, no, it's a great book. Yeah, Ray Dalio, I really liked his sort of football cards kind of analogy and like...
anything sports-related analogies, I'm all over. But yeah, that's definitely a good place to find some.
What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
Yeah, you know, when thinking about my business, the question that comes to mind always for me is how to establish more trust. You know, when we're coming to the table in an untrusted space of vitamins and supplements, we're also tapping into DNA information. There's a lot of misconceptions around that, and DNA privacy in particular, which we have absolutely no qualms of obliging with. So, you know, we don't sell, we don't share, we don't do it, we don't make clones of people. But, you know, it's really trust and how to constantly, even in cold audiences, establish more trust. I think it's a really interesting time for trust. There's a lot of problems, especially in North America, with trust of media and ads and social networks. And you can even see it in experience with ads and comments. I find it so funny that people will prioritize their privacy over their health. Meanwhile, they're on social media networks that are collecting more data about them every time they write a comment on a Facebook ad than we potentially are by looking at their DNA and like a small portion of their DNA. It's like the misalignments there in terms of thinking. There's this great quote. It's by Isaac Asimov, who's a great prolific thinker, and I would suggest anybody to just quickly Google him and see a whole bunch. But one in particular that comes to mind is the saddest aspect of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom. And I couldn't resonate more with that. Like it's a challenging landscape that we've decided to enter, knowing full well what we are getting into. And it's a challenge that, you know, we're not shying away from. We think we can keep pushing at and keep educating and keep edutaining people to really bring them around to the importance of even just harnessing your own DNA, whether it's with us or anywhere. You know, I envision a future where at birth, everybody gets their DNA tested and, you know, the parents get this report that you can take meaningful action off of. You can upload to all these different places to get, whether it's nutritional insight or diet and exercise or whatever, like maybe how your kid is most likely to succeed. Like, who knows what they're going to come up with as they constantly keep evolving DNA research. But it's one of those things, you know, there's this, you constantly hear, oh, it's in my family, or this and this is in my family. It's like, yeah, but there's a 50% chance that it's in you, you know, like go understand your own genetics, you know, like go harness the power that's totally available. What used to cost like $10 million 10 or 15 years ago is now $60. Like, it's almost negligence to not tap into this information. And I really want to just encourage people, you know, how do I encourage more people to not only trust, but to leverage the power of DNA? And that's the question that I think is top of mind quite a bit.
I think that's such an exciting question. Like you said, like the negligence, like nowadays it's so easy to have regular blood work. It's so easy to get food intolerance tests, and it's so easy to get DNA results. And those are they're such important areas for your health, knowing what to avoid, what to supplement, what to add, just in your world, and to, as well as spotting patterns in things that might be, you know, getting worse or falling out of safe ranges and stuff. I'm referring more to like the blood test. There's a lot of things we can do. Like, we've never been more empowered.
With regards to blood versus DNA, I think that's an interesting part of the conversation. Thanks for bringing it up. You know, it's like, I see blood as like a snapshot, you know, what you could have ate or what you could have exercised yesterday or what you could have done. It's going to affect your blood tomorrow or whenever you get that blood test. Meanwhile, DNA, it doesn't change unless you're doing gene altering technology, which obviously we're not taking into consideration, but, you know, it doesn't change. It is the root. It is, you know, the blueprint. It is what's going on in your body that you can immediately tap into for now and the future. So, you know, blood it's a great tool, especially when you're sick. You know, if you have an immediate problem, blood all the way. I wouldn't, you know, if you've never done DNA, I would say, hey, maybe take a look before you start thinking about treatments or pharmaceuticals or, you know, nutrition. But with regards to blood, I think it's a phenomenal tool when you're sick and a snapshot, and that's what you need action on right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But DNA is like your hardwiring. It's your foundations. Exactly. It's you, and it's always will be you unless you, like you said, do something radical and mix yourself with a sheep or something. What advice would you give your younger self?
I feel like it wasn't until pretty late in my career that I started writing things down. I think it's such a valuable thing to do. Is write down thoughts, ideas, questions you've got, you know, conversations you've had. Take notes. And I think that also while writing it down, it helps commit it better to memory and makes it more referenceable just in your brain and short and medium term and even long term when you need it. I've never been impressed by a waiter or a waitress who's just like standing there, you know, listening to you place your order. It actually gives me like a slight bit of anxiety. And I'm not like that. I'm a very optimistic person. I don't believe that, you know, by not writing it down, they're going to get my order wrong. But it constantly just weighs on me. It's like, why don't you just write it down? Like, I'm not going to, in fact, I might even tip you more if you did.
I'll write it down for you. Here you go. I've written it down.
I don't know. It's something about it. I've never been impressed by that. Like, people who have that type of auditory or visual memory, like, if you need to go reference something to get it perfectly right, please go do that, you know?
I like that. What was your biggest challenge starting in business, and how did you overcome it?
You know, I've been a career guy for quite a while. And I think that the real biggest challenge for me was putting aside, you know, that steady, comfortable income, and really making that upfront sacrifice. being committed to that sacrifice was probably the most difficult part. Once you get over that hurdle, you cut that check and you're in it, nothing seems to have really fazed me. And you know, kudos to my awesome co-founder for you know, being that yin to my yang, if you will, and really balancing us all out. But yeah, I would say perhaps finding a co-founder or, you know, making that first leap.
Nice. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Drink. I'm a big fan of a paper plane. If you've never had a paper plane, I would suggest going to a bar and asking for it. It's like a bourbon-based drink with Amaro and Aperol. It's delicious. The best one I've ever had, just to give them a shout out, because I think they deserve it, is in this, and this is going to sound bougie as hell, I'm sorry, but it's in this like private members club in San Francisco called The Battery. And it's been one of two places that has ever made a paper plane where the garnish, instead of it being like a lemon twist, is a folded bar napkin paper plane. And if they're willing to do that for a garnish on a drink, I'm all for it. Because that means they know exactly how to make that drink and it's going to be great. So a paper plane, I would highly recommend. Other than that, I'm a huge fan of grapefruits. I don't know. I love grapefruits. Not everybody likes those. Some people think they're too bitter or gross or messy or whatever. I like them a lot. So my parents live in Florida and they ship me these awesome ones kind of twice a year that are super, super fresh. And I just sit there staring at them all giddy.
Love that. And then last question, Adam, what makes you happiest?
Tried to do this assessment. I was listening to somebody else speak about happiness and how to like mark down their happiness. And in fact, I think it might've even been Bert Kreischer, the stand-up comedian, about like how he needs to do things that make him happy and do less things. And one of the ones that he like went on a rant about was, he loves the immediate taste of hot sauce, but the way that it makes him feel after is not happy. It's like this constant dichotomy with wanting more hot sauce and not wanting the later results. For me, happiest, I think, is ultimately knowing that I've made a difference. And, you know, it's something that my family and my friends could be proud of. I cherish my family and my friends really, really high. I put them before me quite often. And having them be proud and having them be happy for me it means a lot.
I like that. That's a very selfless answer, but an authentic one.
What's yours? Just out of curiosity.
Do you know what? I think this is a really hard question, and there is a part of me every time I ask it, I'm like, oh, you know, shots fired. Like, you know, please don't ask me it back, kind of thing. Actually, a few of the questions are like that. But I would say with me, there's a number of things that make me happy, and there's the answers that you expect, right? There's the answers, you know, like my family, my son, my whatever. And of course, those are amongst the things that make me happy, but they're not the answers that you're looking for, like with the question, right? Or the answers I'm looking for with the question. Now, I would say on reflection, there's a number of things that make me happy, but the one that stands out today, I would say, is progress, meaningful progress. And there, it's a bit of a catch-all as well as an answer, because it's progress towards the things that I've deemed important, right? And longer form, I do these check-ins, I do these weekly check-ins with my wife, I do yearly like annual audits where I'm sort of really looking at the year gone by, the year coming up, and then I'll try and weekly sort of hold myself accountable to the things that I've deemed important, right? So it's progress towards those kind of things. But really, I think the thing that makes me unhappy is being stationary, or learning that I've gone very hard in the wrong direction, right? Like you've just got caught up in a bridge that you have no business building, or a shiny object isn't something that I don't have that problem so much now that I'm in my 30s as an entrepreneur, my second decade of it, right? It's a younger entrepreneur thing, I think. But I think those are the things which sort of make me unhappy.
There's this great Toby, the CEO of Shopify, he's got this great quote about how they're never wrong. They only successfully understood what didn't work.
Yeah.
So, I love the way he said it. But yeah, I'm totally with you. The wrong direction for too long can be very unhappy at moments.
yeah, or just, you know, just being a little bit too stationary without that being like progress in being stationary. Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? Like, if your goal that day is to do nothing and to reset and recharge, which I think is something that's been lacking in my recent years, actually, to a point where we're sort of doing something about that. But you know, the progress can be towards whatever, but it's you know, that's what I would identify today as being one of the important areas of being happy. And yeah, I identify with what you said, being selfless, putting other people in front. And I think the two are connected there, because one of the things I've learned through doing that and putting other people in front of me constantly, you sometimes can get to the point where you haven't properly attached your own oxygen mask. Right. And, you know, the analogy on the plane, like you attach your own oxygen mask before others, because you can't help others if you suddenly, in fact, you become a burden to others. Right. If you suddenly trouble breathing or whatever. Right. So I think sometimes, you know, it's important to be selfless, but there's times where it's important to be. It's not selfish. It's the opposite. Isn't selfish. It's being. Cautionary, or being sensible. I don't know what the correct expression, to just making sure that you don't become a burden through neglecting yourself.
It brings this conversation quite full circle, you know, what you just said. When I was wanting to become an entrepreneur, when I made that decision, one of the things that I told myself really early on, and that I resonated with from previous careers, is like, burnout is not a badge of honor. And it should not be a badge of honor. And instead of, you know, always thinking about yourself and your business and, you know, devoting 18 hours a day on your business, having some portion of you that is selfless, that's giving back to your family, that's calling a friend out of the blue, that's calling a family member and just having a conversation, taking that time to really, I think it not only benefits yourself and gives you that kind of, you know, separate opinion, separate talk, separate conversation, take your mind off things, but it also, it's a balance. And, you know, I think that to achieve health optimization, to achieve success, to achieve, you know, to not be a burden and to put your mask on first is also, you know, taking time away from your business to do that. So really interesting how that kind of all came together for me.
I think that's such a cyclical thing. And I remember I had a guest on the show, and he talked about how he does something similar to what I do, where I've got these different areas of my life, and I'm basically rating the last week out of five, right? Like how much progress did I take within that area, right? Where it might be family, it might be creativity, it might be adventure, it might be finance, right? Whatever, right? Rating each out of five. And what he had observed was that when he had, say, a few of those, he might have nailed four and a half out of five, five out of five, but then some of them would be like a one. What he observed was actually when more of them were at a lower level, so when like all of them were at a three, three and a half out of five kind of level, he felt much happier and fulfilled than when just like, you know, like more than half of them are at a five, but one was at a zero, you know, or a couple of them are at really low level. That made him feel way, like you notice that lack of progress in those areas. And so think of it as spinning plates, whatever you want, but like, you know, having all of them at a higher level as possible, rather than just some of them at a massively high level, just that difference, that subtle difference seemed to be important. I think, you know, it's so important. And so if there's a service out there whereby without even really needing to think, you can just plug in your DNA and get the things that tick the boxes and make sure you're feeling great. That would be a hell of a service, right? So try autumn.com, folks, for that. Adam, it's been an amazing, amazing discussion, amazing interview. I think I spoke a little bit more than I normally do on these things, but I don't know if you're just that conversationalist, you're coming across with Zoom, who knows what that is, but it's definitely a topic that I find very, very important and intriguing. I love that you're venturing into it and you're delving into it and taking on the pain and struggles that honestly, like what people see on that website is just, man, that what they don't see is enough to slay a lot of people. I know that you're going through the grind to make this happen. And the world thanks you for doing so. But it's been a tremendously interesting interview today. I'd love some of your questions as well in the question and answer round as well. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today, Adam.
No, thanks so much for having me, Martin. It's a pleasure connecting with you, seeing you again, seeing how your business and everything you're doing has progressed. Smarter Destiny, awesome. I'm going to keep being a fan, keep listening in, so keep it up.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.